number one.
This happened when I was about 12 or so. I still think about it sometimes, and it still unsettles me. My family owned several acres of corn in Iowa. Birds are actually pretty smart, so my mom made some very realistic scarecrows in order to fool them. The scarecrows had glass eyes glued onto their faces. They wore white gloves, old boots, and had fat bellies made of hay. When the wind blew, their skinny arms would dangle and jerk as if they were dancing. The scarecrows gave me the creeps, but I tried to act manly, like all 12-year-old boys do. I was not allowed to leave the house at night. When I asked why, my mother made some vague excuse about dangerous hobos who lived in the woods. But one night, I snuck out to see a girl who lived 2 miles down the road. I climbed into the hayloft of her dad's barn and waited for her, but she never showed up. Finally, I left. I was walking through the cornfield alone. Just as I passed by a scarecrow, I heard a noise. The scarecrow was breathing. I will never forget the noise as long as I live. It was a low hiss, like someone was inhaling through a mouthful of hay and cloth. It then turned its head towards me. It was a windy night, and the scarecrow's arms twitched horribly, like a person convulsing. I was so scared I bolted straight out of there. I ran as fast as I could the rest of the way home. I crawled through my bedroom window and closed it. I stared out into the field, heart pounding. I reached for the flashlight in my nightstand. With shaking hands, I pointed it out the window. A form shuffled out of the cornfield, but it wasn't a scarecrow. It was a man, an old hobo that I recognized. He walked down past the cornfield and disappeared into the woods. I hid under my covers. It was hot and hard to breathe, but I was pretty sure I had successfully escaped. The neighbor girl went missing the next day. My mother was convinced the old hobo had kidnapped her, but unfortunately, the police never found a trace of her. That summer, the area around the scarecrow began to reek. It was a thick, putrid smell that coated your lungs like iron rot. We ignored it for as long as we could, but as the days got hotter, the smell got worse, and eventually my mother told me to take the scarecrow down. The scarecrow's head was in a burlap sack stuffed full of hay. With trembling hands, I cut the rope around the scarecrow's neck. I reached up and removed the sack. A human face stared back at me. It was the corpse of the neighbor girl. Her face was bloated. Her eyes were two sunken pits of rot. And her mouth was stuffed full of hay.
Number 2.
I am, or rather was, in training to be a coroner. My education was almost complete, and I had been working a paid internship with a well-known medical examiner's office in Washington, D.C. That all changed a few hours ago, when I was fired from the office for refusing to participate in what I believed to be a massive cover-up. Even though they warned me about the consequences for leaking any information about this case, my conscience wouldn't be clear if I kept quiet. This is something people need to know. A few days ago, we received a call from the Metro Police about a possible body discovered on the Red Line. Since working here, we've responded to a few calls in the subway system. The first time it was a woman who tripped over someone's suitcase while trying to pass by on the escalators. She ended up with a broken neck. Twice we went down there for a heart attack, and once for a late-night mugging gone bad. The poor guy was stabbed repeatedly in the stomach, even though he handed over his wallet and watch like the mugger requested. So far, I hadn't really seen anything especially gory, and it was a bit of a letdown when the dispatch officer said the man was just found sitting on the train. And by the way, is it wrong that I actually look forward to calls about someone jumping or being pushed in front of a train? The interesting thing is the wording of the dispatch request. Possible body. If the word possible is in front of the word body, maybe it's the paramedics that should be responding, and not the coroner's office. When we arrived, the paramedics actually were on scene, so we figured it was just a miscommunication, and we were called out prematurely. Police tape blocked off the entire station platform. and from our view at the top of the escalators, we could tell by the way the professionals were acting that something wasn't right. The paramedics stood outside the door to the train car, and they weren't actually doing anything except arguing and pointing at the body that was slumped up against the window inside. We could have left, but since it was a slow evening, we decided to take a look anyway, just to see what was going on. As we approached, I overheard some of the conversation between two paramedics and saw one of them run his hands over his face in agitation, and he whispered,
"Ah, dead people don't do that."
Once they saw us, they quickly agreed that the man was dead and promptly left the scene. Clearly, this was not a call they wanted to handle. I chatted with one of the officers on the scene while the doc went to examine the man on the train. One of the detectives commented that there wasn't any clear signs of foul play. The witnesses claimed that the guy just sat down like everyone else and he just stopped breathing. So natural causes then. It seemed like a pretty cut and dry case. But when I looked over my shoulder at the doc, he seemed confused. He waved me over and I walked onto the train.
"Look at this."
As I approached, it seemed like the man was just napping, like a lot of train riders do when they know that their stop won't be coming for a while.
"Look at what?"
"His eyes."
The man's head was leaning forward, with his chin on his chest, so I had to kneel down to get a good look at his face. As I was doing that, the doc spoke out loud, going over his mental checklist.
"Not breathing, no pulse. His skin is cold to the touch. Approximate time of death, 6 to 8 hours ago."
I tried to examine the man's eyes with a pen flashlight, since the dim lighting on the train wasn't helping things much. The eyes were open, and they seemed to be staring at me, which is not uncommon. So I leaned closer to try to figure out what the doc wanted me to see, so I didn't look like an idiot. And then, the dead man blinked. I jumped back as quick as a mongoose would jump away from a cobra.
"What the fuck?"
"Exactly."
"That's got to be just a muscle spasm, right?"
"You would think, but watch this."
He grabbed the guy by the hair and pulled his neck back, and with his other hand he waved a finger in front of the man's open eyes, which began to follow along as the doc moved his finger left and right. Then the man looked at me and blinked again.
"What the... Okay, that's not... Have you ever seen anything like this before?"
"Nope."
"And he's dead?"
"As dead as Hitler."
I felt a cold chill run down my spine, as the sensation that we were dealing with something that science could not explain set in. We let the officer in charge know that we wouldn't be able to determine the cause of death on sight. A full autopsy would need to be performed to make any kind of determination. She made a note in the report that the body had the tendency to follow you with its eyes and occasionally blink. Off the record, she told me the whole case bothered her. She said that the man didn't have any type of identification, credit cards, watch, jewelry, phone, or even money. They just found him on the train, and all he had on him was a ticket and a napkin. Once we had him back at the office, we changed into our examination coveralls. I was asked to deal with this clothing. The man watched me the whole time as I stripped off his business suit. He even winked at me once. I noticed a few odd things about how the man dressed, such as he wasn't wearing any undergarments. Normally, people wear a t-shirt, underwear, and socks. This guy wore none of those things, but for some reason, he had on two belts, one over the other. The doc switched on his tape recorder and turned on the buzzsaw. I watched as he performed the Y incision across the chest, and I made a note of how perfect his technique was, so that I could try to do it better next time. Next came the enjoyable cracking sound, as the ribcage was pried open. All while this was happening, the man's eyes watched us solemnly. I could almost swear that the corners of his mouth were starting to form a smile. Over the next hour, the doc made notes during the examination. He handed me each of the organs to be weighed and cataloged. But there was nothing strange or out of the ordinary about any of the internal organs.
"Okay, let's take a look inside his head. I want to see what's causing the eye movement."
"Listen, do you mind if we tape his eyes shut first?"
I was trying to remain as professional as I could, but the constant blinking was unnerving me. The doc didn't mind. So I took some suture tape and worked up the courage to physically close the guy's eyes and tape them down. Immediately they started moving very fast. His whole face started convulsing and contorting itself, trying to break free of the tape.
I don't think he likes that.
The doc removed the tape from the man's eyes, and the violent motion stopped right away. Then the corpse winked.
This is so fucked. He shouldn't be able to express dislike at all. He is a corpse. There's nothing natural about this.
There's a scientific reason for everything, and it's our job to find it. Let's try to keep our emotions in check.
But he actually fought to get the tape off his eyes so he could watch us. That's more than strange. That's unnerving, bordering on terrifying.
Would you like to remove the skull, or shall I?
I was too shaken to handle the equipment, so I watched as the doc worked the saw around the man's skull. The dead bastard was smiling now. It was small, but it was definitely there. A devious, almost pleased smile. He stared at me, blinking his left eye, and then his right eye back and forth. I heard the familiar popping sound caused by the top of the skull being pulled off.
Wow. That's...
What is it?
I walked around to see what he was staring at within the man's head.
I think I might have to call this one in.
Dear God. His brain is missing. Doc, how is... No. No.
Get a hold of yourself. Pack up and go home. I'll finish cleaning this up.
He picked up the landline and started dialing a number.
I don't think you should be alone with this thing.
I won't be for long. Just go. I'll call you later. Don't say anything to anyone.
I noticed how even though his voice was strong, his hand shook as he poured himself a glass of scotch with the foam pressed to his ear. I gathered my things without saying another word and left, never to make eye contact with that corpse again. The doc never called me back. Every time I tried to reach out to him the following day, it went straight to voicemail. I tried to go back, but security wouldn't let me in the building. They said I was to await further instructions while on paid leave. That was 4 days ago. This morning, I heard a knock at my door. It was a man who said he was with the medical examiner's office, but looked as if he was with the CIA, FBI, NSA, or some other three-letter abbreviated agency. He asked me if he could come in and talk. I reluctantly opened the door to let him in, and noticed two other well-dressed men sitting in a black Suburban across the street. The folder he handed me was a case file for the John Doe that was found on the train. All of the notes about the eye movement and the blinking were removed. There was no mention of anything out of the ordinary at all, let alone a missing brain. It already had the doc's signature on it. And this strange, suited man was asking me to sign it as well. I tried to tell him that the file was wrong, but he held up a hand to stop me from speaking, and told me to sign it. I asked about the doc, and the man simply replied that he had been let go. The way he said it made me think the worst. I refused to sign it, and asked to speak with the director of the medical examiner's office. The man informed me that that would be impossible. He handed me an envelope and told me that I was officially fired. Except fired wasn't the word he used. The word he used was terminated. He made to leave, but just before he cleared the door's threshold, he warned me that mentioning this to anyone would have serious consequences. As soon as the door closed behind him, I picked up a bag and took off. I saw the black Suburban parked at the end of my street, and I'm pretty sure it pulled out just after I noticed it. Just in case I was being followed, I changed direction several times. When I finally felt safe enough, I pulled to a nearby residential neighborhood and found an open Wi-Fi signal. I think something strange is going on in DC, maybe elsewhere as well. I have no idea what could it be, but I feel like the doc and I have stumbled onto something that we weren't supposed to know about. And now, we're in danger. I found the doc's home number online, but when I called it, it went straight to voicemail. I tried to leave a message for him, but the line went dead as soon as I began talking. If someone is monitoring my phone calls, it's possible that my car is bugged as well, and they already know exactly where I am. Maybe I'm just being paranoid. Maybe there is a completely logical explanation for a corpse that stares and winks and smiles. But I am scared. Very scared. I decided the one thing I could do would be to write this and email it to everybody I know. Hopefully this information will make it to someone. If you receive this and haven't heard back from me by tomorrow, then I am probably dead, and you'll know that what I've written is true. Watch out for the men in black, but especially watch out for what I call the Scarecrow Corpses.
Number 3.
I live in farm country, Illinois. Back in April, my uncle died of pneumonia at 80 years old. He lived a very difficult life because one of his legs was slightly larger than the other, and it caused him extreme back pain, which made working on his farm an excruciating and stressful ordeal. Because of this, he was a pretty severe alcoholic, and would often get into physical fights with his friends and family members. Back in the late 90s when he was 60, he was arrested for suspicion of killing his neighbor over a dispute about the property line, and was brought in for questioning. But there was no body, or even definitive proof that the neighbor was dead, and the police eventually released him. The neighbor's wife had found her husband's blood-stained hat caught in the breeze, dancing across their property line, but the man himself was never seen again. Most of the people in town suspect my uncle of killing him in a fit of rage and disposing of the body, as did most of my own family, and they cut him out of their lives despite him never being charged with the crime. I still have the original copy of the newspaper showcasing the story about the cops arriving at his house with a search warrant to investigate his property, but no evidence of a body was ever uncovered. I was one of the few who remained in touch with my uncle after the police investigation. Towards the end, I would visit him almost every weekend to help him clean and cook for him. I never asked him about his neighbor. I knew he was fearsome when drunk, but in my heart, I would like to think he never savagely attacked another person, intending to kill them. After he died in his sleep at home, my family came and cleared out the house, intending to sell the property. I went back into the field and started collecting odds and ends, like buckets and shovels, that had been left abandoned. Out in the farthest field from the house was a slouching scarecrow up high on a crooked pole. I remember on multiple occasions seeing the scarecrow from afar, but now that I was actually up close to it, I had to admire my uncle's craftsmanship. The scarecrow had a crude wooden mask, covering a burlap sack for a head, a long overcoat over a pair of overalls, and a denim shirt with two rusty hatchets hanging upside down of the pant legs, which I suppose were meant to be feet. The hands were particularly creepy. It looked like my uncle had broken a metal rake in half and attached them to the sleeves, giving the stuffed man multiple rusty claws. It suited my uncle's personality overall. I climbed up on a stool and labored for 10 minutes to take the scarecrow off its perch. I hated being so close to it. It reeked of wet straw, rust, and mold. I cut myself twice on the barbed wire that my uncle used to attach it to the pole, and I finally got frustrated and just knocked the pole over. When it hit the ground, there came a clattering sound from within the chest area. Before I tied it to the tractor to drag it up to the house, I felt around the chest cavity and noticed that my uncle had installed something round and hard inside it. I figured that he must have used a bird cage or something to serve as its torso, like a rib cage. I thought it was weird, yet grotesquely clever at the same time. I dragged the scarecrow back to the house using the tractor and tossed the entire thing, pole and all, into the fire pit, intending to destroy it along with a handful of other old rotten wooden planks and junk. But the sky chose that moment to open up and downpour hard. I ended up locking up the house and driving home for the night. When I returned the following day at noon, I went inside for a while to clean up, and then walked out into the backyard, where I noticed to my surprise that the scarecrow wasn't where I had left it on the burn pile. I climbed up on the tractor and followed the gouges left in the dirt until I located the scarecrow halfway back across the field, where I had originally removed it from. I glanced around in every direction, scanning the earth for footprints, but was unable to locate any. That really didn't make any sense to me, as the rain from the previous night had left the ground so wet and muddy that the tractor had nearly gotten stuck a couple of times. But what bothered me even more was that the scarecrow was lying face down, its metal hands outstretched in front of it, as though it had intended to pull itself back to its original spot, dragging the heavy pole behind it. I figured that some trespasser had attempted to make off with it, but had either gotten tired or spooked and left it. I was wondering about this as I tied it to the tractor and drove it back up to the fire pit. The wood was still too wet to burn, so I threw the scarecrow back on top of the pile and finished my sweep of the property. I ordered a pizza that night, finished cleaning inside the house, locked up, and was making my way back to the car, when I decided, what the hell, I'll check on the scarecrow again. I walked around back with my flashlight on and made for the pile. I actually froze in my tracks and dropped my keys when I noticed that the scarecrow wasn't there. I swept the beam of the flashlight around and discovered it about 10 yards away, in the same position it had been before, hands outstretched in front of it. I felt a chill run down my spine. Had someone been on the property when I was in the house? I looked around with the flashlight for a few minutes, but was unable to locate anyone hiding nearby. I dragged the scarecrow back into place and quickly got out of there. The next day, my brothers and I had intended to have a cookout in the backyard, where we would drink the rest of my uncle's beer, put some steaks on the grill, and set a bonfire using all the scrap from around the property, including the scarecrow. I arrived late, well after my brothers, and walked around back to find that the fire had already been lit. I asked them if the scarecrow had been on the pile, since I didn't see it burning, and they replied that they had no idea what I was talking about. Feeling somewhere between very annoyed and mildly creeped out, I hopped back on the tractor and drove back out into the field that was furthest from the house, and dead center, perched on top of its pole, was the scarecrow. Dirt embedded between its metal claws that acted as its fingers. Part of me just wanted to leave the thing there this time, but another more stubborn part of me refused to allow this thing to beat me. This time I just tied a rope from the tractor around the pole and pulled the whole thing out of the ground and hauled it back to the house for the third time. When I arrived back at the fire, I detached the rake hands from the scarecrow and threw them aside. My brothers looked at the gruesome stuffed man in morbid fascination. My brothers eventually heaved the entire scarecrow on the fire, pole and all, and cheered as it started to burn. A few minutes later, we all went inside, deciding to let the fire burn itself out. We all got drunk and toasted my uncle, and ended up blowing up some air mattresses and spending the night. At about 4 in the morning, I awoke, needing to take a piss. After I had done my business, I returned to my makeshift bed. I was distracted from falling back asleep by a scratching sound coming from outside the house, directly behind the wall I was nestled against. I figured it had to be some small animal, and eventually put it out of my mind and went back to sleep. The following morning, I was awoken to my brother's loud cursing and yelling. I ran outside to discover the skeletal black remains of a human torso, minus the hands, covered in tattered remains of a denim shirt, directly underneath the living room window that I had been sleeping beside. There was a long path of ash, trailing from behind it back to the direction of the fire pit. Upon closer inspection, we found the rest of the skeleton, minus the feet, back in the charred remains of the smoking pile. The skull had been caved inwards, right above the ear, and we came to the conclusion that our uncle had killed his neighbor, and instead of burying the skeleton, used it as a frame for his scarecrow, hiding his crime in plain sight. We argued about calling the cops, and ultimately decided not to. They would want to know why we had dragged half of the skeleton out of the pit and over to the house. We had no explanation for that. My brother took the remains and drove them a few miles up the road and dropped them in a lake. Both of my brothers would be furious if they found out I was writing this, but I couldn't resist sharing this story. I still have no idea who or what was dragging the skeleton scarecrow around, but there's a skeptical part of me who thinks it was a bored trespasser, but another terrified part of me thinks that it was the ghost of my uncle trying to keep his crime hidden, or it was the spirit of the dead neighbor. trying to reveal itself. I guess I'll never know.
There's always a reason to be afraid.